Welcome to the Drive Time Show on Toledo's Sports Leader, 106.5 The Ticket.
Miguel swings it to fly ball, right field, way back and right. Garcia to the fence, looking up, and it's gone, a home run.
Wow.
Miguel Cabrera with a two-run shot to right is 24th, his fifth home run in the last week. The Tigers hit it.
This 106.5 The Ticket Sports Exclusive is driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik Jr. at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore.
Matthews got it, throws. He's got Golden Tate, who makes the catch inside the 15, inside the 10, and he's biking away. He's into the end zone. Pack the bags. Start the plane. This game is over. Oh, baby, how big is that?
Get ready. It's now Drive Time.
Sweeping left side, 10-5. Touchdown, Curtis Samuel. And the Buckeyes win it in overtime. A game that they trailed by 10 points to give Ohio State a 30-27 victory over the University of Michigan.
Here's the host of Drive Time.
Now Gretzky's got a breakaway. He's in all alone. He shoots and scores.
Mike Miller is out there watching.
On its way, here's Chris DeMarco to win it. He wins it. DeMarco, 15 feet, 4 inches, center of the cup, President's Cup to the United States.
All right, everybody, how are you? Another edition of Drive Time tonight, coming to you from the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. This is ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. As always, this show driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik. Glad to have you on board, everybody. Opening day for the Detroit Tigers. We have it on the big screen up here in the beautiful showroom at the Superstore. They have already introduced the starting lineups, the Detroit Tigers and the Chicago White Sox. This game was scheduled to start at 4:10. The tarp is still on the field. Now, the Tigers, like Major League Baseball normally does, all teams that open up, usually there's a window game right in the middle of the series. That game was supposed to be tomorrow for the Detroit Tigers. Problem in Chicago is, and we're probably going to see this over Toledo the next couple of days, rain for the next couple of days in Chicago as well. The other side of this story, both teams will send their aces out today. Justin Verlander for the Tigers. Of course, Quintana for the Chicago White Sox. You don't want to burn your ace in this situation. You know, and they're looking at the, I'm sure at the Weather Channel and the folks that they have do this in the Chicago area. They say there is a window here in the Chicago area, but it's only going to last about an hour or so. That's the problem. Do you send out Verlander? Do you send out Quintana? All of a sudden it starts raining. You've burned your ace on opening day. But I think because of that window only being an hour or so long, what they're trying to do is get all the introductions. Some of the pregame ceremonies have already been canceled here today. Ones that, of course, that involve dignitaries and introducing a bunch of people. They've thrown that to the curb for the afternoon. They did introduce the teams. The tarp is on the field, saving time. So if it takes you, what, 10 minutes to introduce, 15 minutes to introduce both teams, you might be able to use that to play some baseball, get the 5.5, 6 in, and not burn 20 minutes of good weather on introductions and pregame ceremonies. So still the holding pattern in Chicago as the Tigers open up their 2017 season. That, by the way, is your Reed Funeral Home Detroit Tiger Report, which gets underway here today. We'll take you through September talking about that. Of course, big night tonight, North Carolina and Gonzaga. North Carolina's a two-point favorite in that game. 5:15 tonight, we'll be talking to Greg Stepan, University of Toledo Hall of Famer, all MAC for 3 years, played some in the Pistons organization, played some in the Milwaukee Bucks organization as well. Greg's going to join us at 5:15. Played a lot in Europe professionally. Great guy, all academic. Every time we've had him on, this guy breaks down basketball as good as anybody. So Greg Stepan coming up here at 5:15 tonight. Then at 5:35, we're going to be talking to Judd Silverman. Everybody knows Judd, of course, is the tournament director for the Marathon Classic, which used to be the Jamie Farr. But Judd was the caddy. And I know a lot of folks will remember this, or at least saw a video of it. You can see it on YouTube. You can see it all over. When Craig Statler was called for a penalty by a fan that called in. Craig really had a shot in that tournament. Hit a ball underneath a tree, had good slacks on, wet grass, so he put a towel down. He was going to swing from his right knee, didn't want to ruin his pants. Somebody called in, putting that towel down is adjacent to and is part of building a stance. Stadler was called to the penalty, and of course the situation with Lexi Thompson over the weekend, really just kind of a bizarre thing. Somebody calls in, four total shots she was penalized, two for the infraction and two for signing a incorrect scorecard, and she ends up losing in a playoff. It's a major tournament, and she loses that. Somebody calls in. I guess my question here, you got to put a time limit on this. What if somebody called in today and they saw a replay of this? It happened on Saturday. Well, this happened on Saturday. They did not approach her until the 13th hole on Sunday. Here she is in a major tournament. Somebody comes walking out, one of these rule officials, and said, hey, you've been penalized four shots, two for the infraction, two for signing an incorrect scorecard. And all of a sudden she finds herself from being up in that tournament three shots to one shot down. I give her credit. She played hard. She got it into a playoff. She lost. Golf's got to do something about this. You know, I'm not so concerned that people want the rules enforced at home, but if you're going to do this, I think eventually the LPGA and the PGA have to get themselves in a situation here. You know, like other sports, everybody else has gone to technology. Tennis has gone to the out-of-bounds line. Baseball's gone to replay. We saw that, of course, in the World Baseball Congress. Football, of course, has gone to replay. I'm not a big fan of replay. I like the human error part of this thing. And plus, the delays a lot of times to me are just too tenuous. But here you are in a major, major tournament, and you have some guy in Rockford, Illinois, sitting around his parents' basement in his underwear and a T-shirt watching television, and all of a sudden, you know, he's on the phone dialing somebody up or emailing somebody going, hey, I just saw a rules infraction here. And all of a sudden, he's part of the story. Now, I get it. Golf's a little bit different where people like the rules enforced. Listen, we've all played with guys that do the foot wedge and, you know, kicking ball. This is the professional tour. For the most part, these guys police themselves. I saw the remarking of the ball by Lexi Thompson. She did. It was not placed down in the area where it was originally marked. I don't even think she moved it forward. She had about a foot and a half putt here. Might have turned it into a foot and 5.5 inches. But to me, it looks like she almost put it sideways. Anyways, we're going to talk to Judd Silverman about that. Judd was on the bag as Craig Stadler's caddy when Stadler was, you know, whistled down for a very, very similar infraction. Dustin Johnson whistling straights, grounding his club, of course, in a sandy area that was deemed a bunker. And the story there were signs all over the locker room and everything else. The players should have known. You're grounding your club in that bunker area, a sand area that's been deemed a bunker. And, again, we've seen this a lot of times, golf coming down the stretch. But a major, Lexi Thompson, that cost her. Over the weekend, Walleye got beat again. They've lost to four straight. Brad Keselowski wins in Martinsville. So that's the agenda. That's the show here tonight, right around the corner. Tonight, tip-off after 9 o'clock tonight, about 9:20. Gonzaga takes on North Carolina. I'm going for the underdog Gonzaga for a couple of reasons. I'll tell you a little bit more about that down the road. This is Drive Time. My name is Mike Miller, coming to you for the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. Tigers, by the way, in a rain play. Back with more after this.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's the host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. There was the boss, Bruce Springsteen. Glad to have you on board. Judd Silverman coming up at 5:35 tonight. Of course, he's the Marathon Classic Tournament Director and was, again, Craig Stadler's caddy when Craig Stadler was called for that infamous kneeling down on a towel penalty years ago before Judd put together this great tournament out at Highland Meadows. Again, the caddy for Stadler. We're going to get his take on the Lexi Thompson situation this past weekend. Penalized four shots, two for the infraction, two for signing a incorrect scorecard. We'll talk about that at 5:35. Tigers, again, rain delay right now, and they're in Chicago. The starting lineups have been introduced. tarp still on the field. We have not started playing baseball in Chicago, and the weather report, believe me, does not look good in the Windy City. Of course, tonight about 9:20, 2017 National Championship NCAA basketball game, Gonzaga against North Carolina. Should be a good one. North Carolina, by the way, is a two-point favorite in that game. Talking to former University of Toledo Rocket. How about this? Three-time All-MAC, two-time All-Academic. Played a little bit in the Pistons and the Bucks organization. Fourth all-time scoring leader in the history of the University of Toledo Rockets basketball. Have not talked to this guy in a while. We've missed him. Greg Stempin joins us. Hello, Greg. How are you?
Good, Mike. How you doing?
Hey, appreciate you taking the time. Thanks a lot for coming on. Well, what do you make of this thing tonight? Of course, I think a lot of folks are going for the underdog, first time to the Final Four, first time to the championship game. Gonzaga, small school, Western Conference champions over the years. Everybody knows their name. They haven't advanced this far. How do you take a look, and how do you break this one down tonight?
Yeah, I'll be completely honest with you. I wasn't a real believer Gonzaga when the tournament started. I had them losing, I think, in the Sweet 16, or maybe it was the Elite 8. But, I'm happy to see power basketball prevail. Both these teams have two big guys that play inside. They also can – one of them can step out on each team and maybe hit a little bit outside jump shot. But, a lot of the teams now are trying to go with these four smaller guys and maybe one big guy. Sometimes they don't even have a big guy on the floor. They have five guys space the floor and try and shoot threes and dribble drive. And it's nice to see, two teams in the final game that have, like I said, a power big guys inside. They throw the ball inside to post up, kick it out to shooters. They have both probably two of the most complete teams inside and out in the tournament, and that's why we have them in the national championship game.
Well, everybody knows the Blue Bloods, North Carolina. This is a team, of course, coached by Roy Williams. He was at Kansas, as everybody knows. Again, Gonzaga's gone to the NCAA for 19 consecutive years. North Carolina, five titles to their name. You mentioned the big guys. Tell me a little bit about North Carolina and what they will have to do right tonight if they walk out of Phoenix with the championship.
I think they'll need to get, what happened against Oregon. Oregon, so they turned the ball over a little bit, and I think North Carolina was able to get out and get some free transition baskets. They had 20 points off turnovers. So that's going to be key, I think, again, because Gonzaga is really tough in the half-court defense, and North Carolina does prefer the game to be a little bit more up and down. So I look for North Carolina to really push the basketball. Offensive rebounds will probably be a key again. I know North Carolina's two bigs really crashed the offensive boards, but defensively, Gonzaga's really tough. I think they're one of the best. I think statistically, they are the best defensive team in the tournament. And they'll look to keep North Carolina off the glass. So I think for North Carolina to win, I think they need to get 20 to 25 transition buckets again to keep their scoring average up and stay out of the half court.
Greg Stempin joins us, Hall of Famer, University of Toledo Rockets basketball. Tremendous career, fourth all-time leading scorer. That, of course, he just touched on if North Carolina is going to be successful. How about the other side of the coin, Greg? Tell me about that. If Gonzaga leaves Phoenix tonight as a champion, what would they have done right?
Yeah, I think they'll look to slow the game down and play in the half court, throw it into Karnowski and try and maybe – get some double teams on North Carolina. North Carolina will probably start off without any double teams, but the guy's so big and strong, if he gets position inside, they're going to try and feed him and then kick it out to the shooters. Williams, Goss, their point guard's been playing very well. They have good shooters out there on the perimeter, and they've been continuing to knock down those three-pointers. So I think they'll slow the game down, throw it inside, and try and play out inside out. And then defensively, like I said, they're going to lock down in the half court. So I think they're looking for a slower game, and North Carolina's looking for the more up-tempo game.
How about the coaches? I mean, a guy like Mark Few, longtime assistant, been there forever. He talked about, I loved his press conference. He said his dad was the same pastor in the same church for 37 years. That's why he's never left Gonzaga. Mainly because it's in his DNA. Once you start something, you're kind of there. And he's going up against the legendary Williams coaching matchup there. I mean, is there a distinct advantage when you're a guy like Roy Williams that's been there before? I mean, listen, it's up to the players. I know how it is in the television side of things. Now you see more shots of the coaches on the sidelines most times than you do the actual players. But tell me about a coaching matchup, a guy that's a legend against a guy that, listens, there for the first time, been around a long time as an assistant, but now the head guy.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of advantage for Roy Williams because he has been there before and won several national championships. Mark Few has been to the tournament, but never this far. I think they've played with that chip on their shoulder, though, of being, there was talk of they didn't play enough solid teams throughout the year, hence their record was so good. But I think he's going to use that as motivation for his team. And sometimes when it is your first time in the national championship game, there could be a little bit of added pressure. But I think they're just going to go out there and play it like, hey, people didn't give us a chance to be here in the first place. Even though they were a number one seed, everybody had them, probably not getting the national championship game. So I think he'll use that as a little motivation for his players, and I think they're going to continue to, slow the game down, and I think they'll be okay.
Gonzaga comes in at 37-1. They get there with a win over South Carolina. North Carolina comes in at 32-7. They get in with a win over Oregon. Can they go at it tonight? We'll have the game right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. We're talking to former University of Toledo Rockets standout Greg Steppen, joins us here on Drive Time. Combating nerves. Tell me a little bit about that. You've played in some big games, Greg. You've been in some tough spots, I'm sure, in your career. Maybe not in this biggest stage, but listen. Nerves are nerves, regardless of the size of the stage. How does a basketball player at this level, on this big stage, going into this one tonight, all I can picture are guys now in their hotel rooms. There's got to be some nerves going on here. How do you combat that so it doesn't affect the things you have to do? Big building, too. We've heard about this before, shooting. You were a great shooter. I didn't bring you on to patronize you, but you certainly could put the ball down in the bucket. Tell me about nerves. Tell me about getting ready in a stage like this.
Well, there's definitely nerves and butterflies right now for all the players. What you try to do is just mainly focus on the game plan. They'll be watching some film before they head over to the gym, and they're going to focus on the game plan. And then you just try and actually, once you get in the warm-up lines and you start just, putting the ball in the basket, it kind of all goes away. But in the beginning, right now they're just focused on game preparation. Like I said, concentrating mainly on the game plan. They're going to look at each player's tendencies defensively. They'll go over all their tendencies of which direction they like to go. If they prefer to shoot, guy prefers to go right or left, or post-up tendencies, right shoulder, left shoulder. So we'll go over all those tendencies of each player, and then they'll just mainly focus on the game plan, like I said, and try and keep your mind off the nerves at hand. But once you get in that layup line and start, shooting shots, it pretty much all just kind of goes away. And then, like I said, in a game, it's all reaction and game flow. So you're pretty much just trying to immerse yourself in the game. I know it's the gym is big and there's a big surrounding around you, but you just, it's kind of an unexplainable thing when you're out there on the floor how you just forget about what's going on around you, and you're just fully concentrated in the competition of the game.
Hey, before I let you go, Greg, you touched on something here very interesting in college basketball, which at times the ratings have not been great. And listen, my theory on this is I used to enjoy watching a basketball game when there wasn't 40 of them on each night, if you follow my thinking on this. There's just so many games that are being aired now. You used to look forward to some of the big games, but there's so much of it. You get to this point, I get it, and the enthusiasm runs very, very high. But changing of the game, something you touched on here, and I had about 10 things written down. This wasn't one of them. You mentioned four smaller players on the court, which you're mentioning small guys. They're probably all 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", guards that can handle the ball, as opposed to the big guys, 6'11", 7-foot, big body guys. Ball goes up and down the floor right now. How did that evolve, and why did it evolve, in your opinion?
When you have a stretch four, you call it a stretch four, usually a little bit smaller four-man, or a four-man who can step outside and shoot the three. The logic is that opens the inside for not only posting the five-man posting up, but also taking people off the dribble. So there are a lot of teams have, I think it actually started in Europe, but Europeans were very well known for that, having a stretch four. And then you started to see them kind of come into the NBA, and then the NBA started to change and evolve to to going with that smaller stretch four and opening up things off the dribble. But I still like to have the two guys. I like to have a four-man that can step out as well as post up and work, you know, hand-in-hand with the five, with the center as well. So the game's gotten a lot quicker, and when the game is quicker, you can play with four small guys on the floor. You look at the Cleveland Cavs in the NBA, and they'll put LeBron James at the four and play him as a power forward. Even though he's, you know, he'll a point guard or a power forward. So they, you know, it's just to open up the flow of the game a little bit more, give yourself a little bit more spacing and have that room for dribble drive penetration.
Good stuff, Greg. Hey, thanks for coming on. Great hearing your voice, whatever you're doing now. Last time we talked, I know you were embarking on a new career. I hope that's going very well for you. Appreciate you coming on tonight, and somewhere down the road we'll touch base again. Thanks.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for having me, Mike. Take care.
That's Greg Steppen. What a great basketball player he was at the University of Toledo. All academic, all MAC three times in a row. Went on a little bit, played in the Pistons organization, Milwaukee Bucks, went on, did very well in both South America and in Europe playing professional basketball as well. But one of the good guys in the game, probably could have been a color analyst for any network if he wanted to be in the business world now. Greg Steppen played for the University of Toledo Rockets from 1997 to 2001. Again, number four all-time leading scorer. Talking about this one tonight, Gonzaga and North Carolina. Again, North Carolina, a two-point favorite in this game. Gonzaga, 37-1. North Carolina, 32-7. You know, I'm going for Gonzaga. I think I probably talked about this. And, you know, one of my first jobs in broadcasting was all the way back in 1980. And I was on the West Coast with, well, not quite the coast. I was east of the Cascade Mountains. And ironically enough, Mount St. Helens had just hit out there. It was a crazy time in that whole eastern portion of the state of Washington. You're around Coeur d'Alene, Idaho there, which is a great, great area, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And I was out there. The team folded. I was only out there for about 11 or 12 games, and they padlocked the doors, and that was it, and one of my first broadcasting jobs. And I headed back east. But I got to tell you, I was running a place above a tavern called the Bulldog Tavern on the Gonzaga campus. Yeah, I looked out my window, and the statue at Gonzaga University at that time was their most, now it wasn't John Stockton, their most famous alumnus. How about Bing Crosby was a Gonzaga alumnus and graduate, and it was a great campus, a small school, 6,800 students playing for a national championship tonight. But I spent, I want to say, probably from August the 1st to October the 1st in Spokane. It's not Spokane. It's Spokane if you're from out there. Great, great part of the country. Beautiful. Unfortunately, the team folded. I ended up back here in Northwest Ohio, and other things happened that turned out pretty well. But I'll be going for a Gonzaga tonight only because I had numerous adult cold beers as a young man at a place called the Bulldog Tavern on the Gonzaga campus. All right, everybody, this is Drive Time. My name's Mike Miller. As always, the show driven by the low-payment king, Ralph Mahalik. By the way, Greg Steppen joined us on the Vito's Pizza phone line. Vito's Pizza, ingredients you can trust. Order by phone at any of the 20 Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan locations by phone or visit Vito's.com. By the way, tonight and tomorrow, their special is a large one-topper and Vito's Cheesy Bread, $9.99. TAS Electronics, update, sports, weather, traffic right around the corner as well. Brought to you by SuperFitnessToledo.com. Back with Judd Silverman after that.
6-5 The Ticket. Here's your host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore. Glad to have you on board, everybody. Talked to Greg Steppen a couple of moments ago, former University of Toledo. Hall of Fame basketball player, spent a little time, of course, in the NBA Development League and part of the Pistons organization at one time, did very well over in Europe in private business practice, now doing very, very well. Doesn't surprise me. He was all academic as well. Joining us now on the Vito's Pizza phone line, Vito's Pizza, ingredients you can trust. Order by phone at any of the 20 Northwest Ohio, Southeast Michigan locations or visit Vito's.com. Tonight and tomorrow, Monday and Tuesday. One large topper, Vito's Cheesy Bread, $9.99. You certainly can't beat that. And joining us now on the Vito's phone line is Judd Silverman. We know him as, of course, a tournament director for the Marathon Classic. But also today, and he reminded me, I knew this story, was the caddy when, of course, Craig Stadler out of Torrey Pines got called on a infraction for kneeling on a towel, building a stance. So as soon as I saw the highlights this morning, I traveled yesterday and saw the highlights this morning of the Lexi Thompson situation, first guy I thought of, Judd Silverman. Hello, Judd. How are you?
How you doing there, Mike? You had to bring up certainly a tough time, tough Sunday back in my past, watching Craig get disqualified a day later after someone had called in a day late. So very controversial, obviously, with what happened to Lexi Thompson yesterday. And, you know, I'm sure it will begin a lot of discussion at the USGA, especially with all the rules that they're going to be taking a look at to go into effect in 2019. But this one should be at the top.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I guess my big – listen, anybody in any, you know, common sense when it comes to sports here, the thing I don't like about it, Judd, more than anything else is, you know, I get maybe somebody's called in. I think that probably will change. But what gets me is the infraction being called a day later when she's on the 13th hole in the final day of a major. That's what gets me.
Well, Mike, you know, the way the USGA looks at it, I agree with you, and I think that's got to be part of the discussion, is as long as the tournament is going on, it doesn't matter if it's the first, second, third, or fourth round, an infraction can be brought to the attention of the committee. And I agree. I think once a round is concluded and the last putt goes in the hole and the scorecard is signed by the last group, I think that should make it official for that day. But as of right now, you know, the rule stands that the USGA said as long as the 72-hole tournament is still going on, you know, they can what happened yesterday can take place where a viewer can call in and they go take a look at it. And then, you know, it's one thing to get two shots on breaking the rule, but boy, another two shots for signing an incorrect scorecard. They've already changed that rule once. What happened to Stadler is he got disqualified from the tournament. He got nothing. And that year he finished second and completed 72 holes. You know, at least they changed the rule now where you can't get disqualified. They just add on another two shots. But I totally agree. I think once a round is over, it's over. And we move on to the next day.
Judd, how far away do you think, and listen, this would be, listen, you know the business side of this as well. Judd Silverman joins us here on Drive Time, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. He joins us on the Vito's Pizza phone line here from the Superstore. How far away are we, you know, maybe following the national, I'm not a big fan of some of these things. I think they take too long and bog down the action. Being a former college baseball umpire, I still like the human element thing a little bit on sides of being part of the games as well. But the more you see about this in golf, you wonder when the LPGA, the PGA, the USGA, all these organizations get together. And look, the tournament's being televised anyways. I get it, though. There's girls that are in 30 or men in the 35th slot playing early on Sunday that are getting the televised scrutiny of a lot of people as well.
Yep.
But I think eventually they're going to have to follow some kind of credence here that there's an official, you know, jurisprudence, a committee that goes to each and every tournament. They're involved with this and overseeing it as opposed to the fan base. Do you see that happening?
Well, you know, I think it's unfortunate, like most people have said here, that the camera is only on one player at any given moment, you know. And on Thursday and Friday, there's 150 players in the field, and on the weekend after they make the cut, there's, you know, 70 to 80. So to be fair to everybody, should the camera be on, you know, everybody at the same time? And I always go back to, you know, it's the competitors are responsible for watching each other. You know, they're keeping each other's score, and they do have a responsibility to the rest of the field to keep an eye on things. And in the USGA, like the US Open, they have an official, and the Masters, they have an official in every group. But for this particular major championship with the LPGA, they just let the LPGA rules team handle it. But there's only, you know, six or seven of them, and they have to cover the entire golf course. So they're not watching every shot. So, you know, I really think the players need to referee each other. And if we need a referee in each group, well, then let's do that. But, you know, to have people calling in and that type of thing when there's only one person on camera, you know, each shot, it just seems unfair to single out somebody and, you know, when the rest of the field, who knows what the rest of the field is doing. So it's controversial, there's no doubt, and I know they will continue to look for the fairest way, Mike. But, you know, like I said before, I really think that, A, they've got to figure out, do the players referee each other? And if we need more referees out on the course, one with each group, I think that is doable. And, you know, just once a round is completed, to me, it should be official and you move on to the next round. And, you know, enough talk on that. I do want to say that I think Lexi Thompson, the way she acted yesterday, what a class act, how she handled this adversity, being told in the middle of a round when she's got a three-shot lead at the time that she's been assessed a four-shot penalty. The emotions that she had to go through were unbelievable because, you know, basically they're saying, you know, you broke the rules. And, of course, she defended herself and said, I didn't do this intentionally. I just think the way she handled it was like a true champion, a class act, and really a role model for golfers everywhere, kids, adults, everywhere. And how she composed herself and made two birdies right after that to take the lead again. It's just a shame she didn't make that eagle putt on the last hole. What a story that would have been. But you know what? She should be very proud of herself for the way she handled it. And, boy, I hope she comes to Toledo this year and plays in the Marathon Classic. We'll start getting our commitment lists here soon. Obviously, the players have all the way up until the week before the tournament to sign up. But Lexi's been a great supporter of the Marathon Classic in her young career. And, boy, I hope she comes back so everybody can pat her on the back for the way she handled that difficult situation.
No, I could not agree more. We saw some great signs of sportsmanship over the weekend. And Connecticut's basketball coach, I thought he was absolutely outstanding after getting knocked off by Mississippi State. Hey, I don't want to digress here too much, but a quick question. I'm guessing a situation, Judge Silverman, you were involved with Craig Stadler there out at Torrey Pines. Was that the first time that somebody had called in your estimation, on a fan, a viewer of the tournament, calling a rules infraction? Would you guess that was the first time?
I'm not sure, Mike, but I believe it was. And, you know, and that call came in a day late. Craig had knelt on the towel during Saturday's third round. The call came in, I believe, when NBC went on the air on Sunday. They showed him chipping the ball out from underneath the tree. They had not shown that live on Saturday, so Sunday was the first time people actually saw it. They were showing some highlights of Saturday's round, and that's when somebody said, wait a second, you know, that's building a stance. You're not allowed to kneel on a towel. He could have put his rain pants on and knelt and chipped the ball out, and it would have been no penalty whatsoever. But, yes, I do believe that was the first time. And obviously what happened to Dustin Johnson in the men's U.S. Open last year, that was painful to watch. So I really do think, these types of rules infractions and the day late type of stuff, I don't think it's helping the game at all. And I think they've got to look at that and figure out what's best.
No doubt about it. Any other updates to the Marathon Classic? And I'm with you. I hope Lexi Thompson comes to town and does get a pat in the back from the great golf fans here in Northwest Ohio. As Judd Silverman joins us here in the Vito's Pizza phone line. Any other updates in the tournament, Judd?
Well, Mike, at this point, you know, we've still got some pro-am spots left in a couple of our pro-ams, and we've got some great hospitality packages and some advertising packages. So if anybody's interested, please have them contact our Marathon Classic office. But we're hoping for great crowds again. And obviously, all the net proceeds go to Toledo Area Children's Charities. Mike, last year the tournament raised $543,000 for 20 different Northwest Ohio and Southeastern Michigan children's charities. That's what this tournament is all about. And, you know, I hope everybody will support it once again.
And you know what? Another important note here, even though I get slapped around a little bit by my cardiologist, my favorite pizza continues to be the Tony Paco's Thin. How do you like that? So, anyways, great having you on, Judd. Great hearing your voice and weighing in on this topic. And you mentioned Dustin Johnson. Everybody remembers the Whistling Straits situation as well. A little bit different there. But thanks for coming on. We'll talk soon. Appreciate it. And all the best.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Judd Silverman, Tournament Director of Marathon Classic. And also weighing in, of course, on this Lexi Thompson situation and the four-shot penalty. You know, maybe the most famous situation here over the years, and this has been a while ago, back in the 68 Masters, Roberto de Villasenzo. How about this? 68 Masters would have won the Masters. He never won another major. Your opponent keeps your score. He actually birdied De Villasenzo, the 17th hole at Augusta National, and his opponent put down four, which is a worse score than what he had. He actually had three, but because De Villasenzo signed an incorrect scorecard, he was disqualified and did not win the Masters. So that was, and Tommy Aaron, who was the guy that, you know, kept score that day. He felt horrible for years. He ended up winning the Masters a couple years later, Tommy Aaron, but that was maybe one of the prime examples. And as Judd just explained now, signing an incorrect scorecard is not a disqualification. It is now a two-shot penalty. Anyways, back to close it out. This has been Drive Time, driven by the low-payment king, Ralph Mahalik. My name's Mike Miller. Back after this.